and welcome to the Trash Tapes Podcast as part of the Enigmatic Productions Network. If you love bad cinema and incredible deep dives into cult film, then you have come to the right place. So if you like what you hear and want to support us, you can do so by donating some funds to our Buy Me a Coffee website, along with the Acast supporter feature. All of these can be found in the description below. And now, on with the show.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I've got a clip, a start-off clip, because, as I said, I watched it on VHS, and when I booted up, well, I booted up, it's not a computer, but when I first inserted the tape and started running, guess what played? It was this.
Oh, that is old school Warner Brothers.
You can hear the tape warbling and everything is like...
That is almost the pinnacle sound of my VHS childhood.
Warner Home Video.
You are about to experience trash cinema.
Oh my God!
And welcome to another episode of the Trash Tapes, where one man's trash is another man's treasure. I am your host, Johan Schiphol, and the inflictor of pain, and I am joined, as usual, by my victim and DJ, Edward Harvey. How are you doing?
I'm very well, sir. How are you doing in this strange situation?
Oh yeah, just to give guys a little heads up what's happening at the moment, we're not in the same room as we're recording this. I'm in my own isolation station, and Edward's very comfortable on the actual couch that we usually would do this on, while I'm on something entirely different.
Yeah, this is like how a lot of podcasters work, but we're doing this for the first time, aren't we?
This is the very first time we're doing this, and I'm not going to lie, this feels so weird. It's always so much better when you are right next to me, so I can just look at your face every single time.
Well, we can still look at each other's faces, but on a screen.
At least the quality of our webcams aren't terrible. It's not like we're doing this on a potato.
No.
So at least we can see each other's faces while we're doing this. But it also does mean that hopefully if all this turns out great and this is doing all right, that this might be another avenue to do once in a while, to do additional podcasts and reviews and stuff like that from here as for the foreseeable future. So you will still be able to make some content. And so this is, I wouldn't call this the test run, but it kind of feels like if this goes well, maybe there's a whole new way of doing things. Woo! So
yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm excited. Because right. We want a few more episodes, don't we? Like, I think once a month is kind of... Because people like are sort of kind of like getting where they're really waiting for the next episode now, and it seems like a long time now for each month.
Yeah, a whole month does take a while. I think it's because we usually do it a month because I always like being over there because I love to see your face and to react right there and then.
Yeah.
It feels more natural. By that point anyway, we've already had a couple of cheeky ciders.
Yeah, this is a sober Trash Tapes.
This is a sober in one thing, because I'm actually having energy drink at the minute.
Black coffee.
Oh, so this is actually going to be a wired edition of the Trash Tapes. We're going to be so buzzed.
Yeah.
It's like I said, it's very different and weird circumstances, but I generally think that hopefully this all goes well, we can create more of this stuff for you guys. And to be honest, to try this one out, I can't wait for this episode to start off, because... this is the one that you, Edward, have been demanding me to do for the longest time.
This is one of my favourite cult movies. It's just, I think it's because when I, because you know, I'm a big fan of like synthwave music.
Yeah.
I think of what inspired synthwave, because like synthwave is kind of like sort of movie inspired, 80s movie inspired music. And when I think of the aesthetic of synthwave, I think of Cobra. Because it's got the synth music, but it's got the visuals that go with synthwave as well. Like the aviator sunglasses, the leather jacket, the souped-up car, all that kind of stuff. That associated with synthwave is Cobra. And that's,
it is Cobra.
It's just, and it's like, it's a pure VHS movie. It's a movie, I've got it on VHS, and it should be played on VHS, in my opinion. That's how it should be viewed.
And you were lucky with that, because you have it on VHS. You've seen it on VHS now. I had to do it the digital way and watch this on Amazon Prime, rented for £3.50. Was it worth it? We'll find out now as we review Sylvester Stallone's passion project, Cobra.
Yeah.
Society is breeding a new kind of criminal. It's also breeding a new kind of cop. Meet Cobra. He does the job nobody wants.
Did you use unnecessary deadly force?
I used everything I had.
You think you would recognize me if you saw him again?
The tall one?
Yeah. The one who wants to kill you.
Do what you have to do to get a lead on this maniac.
And if I find him?
Do what you do best.
This is where the law stops, and I start. Stallone is a cop called Cobra. The strong arm of the law.
A couple of reasons why I think I'm kind of glad we're doing Cobra, because it covers two categories all in one bundle, right?
Yeah.
First of all, this would be our very first Sylvester Stallone movie.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's about time we tackled Stallone at some point. Like, we really had to. I mean, I love Sylvester Stallone, and I do think that it's about time that we give him a good ribbing. And I think this movie's perfect for that.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few, like, options for Stallone with the Trash Tapes, but this is probably one of the best ones to choose. Yeah.
Also, it's a canon movie.
Yeah.
So this canon being almost the epitome of low budget 80s action movies. The Canon group were the ones who did all the classically schlocky action movies back in the day, particularly like things like with Chuck Norris and stuff like that. Like,
I didn't realize this was canon.
This was canon.
Yeah.
This was done by the Canon group.
Oh, because I thought it was just Warner Brothers, because Warner Brothers is all over the video cassette I've got.
It is. It is done by Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
But I'll explain why. It's technically a Canon movie, but they didn't really promote the fact that it was a Canon movie.
Ah, interesting.
Right.
For people who have no idea what we're talking about, let me just break it down a little bit. Let's go for the history. And another reason why a good trash tape comes in is because the backstory to the movie is sometimes more fascinating than the movie itself.
Yeah, I actually know some of this, but I'll let you go ahead up.
Yeah, whenever you have a chance, throw something in there. So,
yeah.
Cobra is a 1986 American action movie directed by George P. Cosmatos, who, Cosmatos, as we know, was the director of Rambo Part 2, right?
Right.
So this was basically Stallone going to him and say, you know, go and say, hey, he's like, hey, I'm making another movie. Do you want to make another movie with me? Hey, you know, kind of thing. That was the worst Stallone impression. Expect more. This movie was also written by Sylvester Stallone, all right, and who's also starring in the titular role. And it also has a fair few people, including Brian Thompson. This was his first prominent role, because Brian Thompson, he, you know, one of the first films before Happy Hook got famous with it. He was one of the thugs in Terminator.
Yes. Yeah.
But also Bridget Nielsen.
Yeah.
Ah, Bridget Nielsen. She's a blast from the past.
I know. I associate it so much with the 80s, and that's it. Nothing else.
Yeah, because all the movies she was really good in, well, we know her from, is things like Red Sonja, Cobra, and also Beverly Hills Cop 2 as well. And
she was she in Rocky IV? Dolph Lundgren's like other half or something, I don't know.
Something like that. But it was weird because I think the reason why they already casted her is because both Dolph Lundgren and Bridget Nielsen had the same haircut. I was convinced.
Yeah.
That's literally the only reason why. It's like you two are blonde and you've got short hair. You are officially both Russians and you're both in a thing now. Go.
Rocky IV and Cobra have got a very similar kind of like aesthetic, haven't they?
Yeah, they do. It feels very much in the same wheelhouse in terms of how certain shots are done, certain angles are done. And I think this kind of starts to show a little bit that you know, the movies that are very much Stallone and very much been taken over and in charge by Stallone, directed by Stallone or whatever, right? Has a very particular style. So in a weird way, we can even argue that Stallone is an auteur.
Well, I remember reading up on this and saying that I think it was a cinematographer that said he thought, even though he had problems with Stallone, like his ego and stuff, he said that he felt more like Stallone was the real director of Cobra.
Exactly. And actually, one of the facts was basically that the cinematographer, Rick Waite, I believe it is, he used to complain a lot to Stallone, mostly because of how falling behind it was. Waite responded by telling Stallone that the delays were due to, I love this quote, due to his fooling around with Bridget Nielsen and showing off his bodyguards.
Yeah, that's so 80s Stallone, that is, isn't it? It's just like, just his ego is obviously massive at that particular time.
He was the shit of the walk, right? And, you know, nothing could touch him. Nothing could touch him, right? And this is the thing I want to go into a little bit more, because this movie is definitely a Stallone project.
Popular pie plan, picture
here. Here's an interesting fact. Let's start right from the beginning. So, originally, this movie wasn't originally going to be Cobra.
No.
Right? This movie was originally the screenplay that he conceived for Beverly Hills Cop, because this was originally going to be a Stallone movie.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. It was, you know, it went through Paramount and all that, and it said, oh, yeah, we're going to try and do this. Stallone, instead of just going along with the script and doing this, because now he got a bit too big for his britches, basically. When he got signed on, he decided to rewrite the script almost entirely.
Yeah, he took taking out all the comedy
and turning into an action movie, which he felt better suited him. But you know, I think it would have been interesting to see him a bit more comedic, because he did try doing that later on. Yeah, it wasn't great.
He said, "I'm not a comedian. I'm a."
I can't do Stallone. I'm not a comedian. I'm a man. I'm an action man, right?
I mean, he's typecasting himself there, really, because he had an opportunity to do something different and go. And so he wasn't typecast as just the sort of serious action guy. But he chose not to go with that route, and you know. But Beverly Hills Cop, as with Eddie Murphy, was amazing.
The thing was, that first rewrite of that with Stallone, he took it to Paramount Studios. They read it. And they instantly rejected it, citing action scenes that were far beyond what were their projected budget would be. In other words, there was so much action that Paramount Pictures said, no, that's too expensive.
Yeah.
So Stallone left after that. And then he used all those ideas and put it into Cobra.
Yeah. I mean, I originally thought that they the studio said no because they didn't like what Stallone did with it, but it was just because of the action sequences, wasn't it? They probably would have still gone along with what Stallone wanted if it wasn't so expensive.
Exactly. It was all basically budget issues.
That's covering five and there.
After all this, basically, he went away and wrote Cobra. But he was inspired by a novel called Fair Game, which was written by Paula Gosling, right?
Yeah.
This is where he cited as the source material. There was enough of the original source materials that she was credited in the movie, right?
Yeah.
Now, this was kind of brilliant what happened here. This is how much of an ego he really thought the script was, how amazing the script was going to be. Because when Cobra came out, Sylvester Stallone allegedly wanted the novel to be reissued with himself not only on the cover, but to be credited as a co-author of that original book.
That is some ego, isn't it? I can imagine his sort of explanation for that would be like, you're going to sell more copies of the book if you got my face on it, kind of thing.
Yeah, is it not just him on the cover, but to him to say he co-wrote the book. The book came out in 1975. The book was already long gone and existed. You're not going to go and suddenly say, oh yeah, now Sylvester Stallone is now the guy who wrote the book as well.
I mean, you did see that happen with, like, books. You know, when a movie came out and the book was reissued, like, the book cover, for example, would have the same poster as the movie, and like, but it didn't have the screenplay writers and stuff on the book. It's just exactly. Like, it's ridiculous.
See, that's the thing that made me go, oh yeah, right. You know, that this script is such a masterpiece that it needed to be like put in the book form. It's so dumb.
And I don't know why he was so proud of it, because the script is awful.
The original script was very long. Like, it was about 2.5 hours long, right? The script version.
Super right? Violent as well, wasn't it?
Humongously so, right? Coppola needed to have a lot of editing afterwards for the simple fact that it was so graphically violent that the movie got an X rating, right? Warner Brothers did not like that, because they said, like, well, if we have an X rating, we're not going to really be able to show that to a mass audience. So the studio then demanded to turn it into an R rating, right? So the movie was cut down a bit, but the original cut of that was only about 10 minutes. So the movie originally was 2 hours long, but the version we ended up getting was only 90 minutes. Now, what I love about that in terms of the edits and the versions is because Top Gun came out around that time, was a smash hit. Stallone and Warner Brothers were worried that Cobra, which would premiere the following week, would be overshadowed by Top Gun. Yeah. So in order to ensure at least one extra screening a day, it was heavily edited to be 90 minutes so they can show the movie more often. So the reason why the movie is so shoddily edited isn't because of some kind of narratively it makes sense to cut all this fluff out. No. In fact, a lot of people said that there is a working cut that's going around circulating by fans, and the two-hour version, even though it's incredibly more violent, the narrative story, in air quotes, makes more sense. No, this was all entirely so therefore more people can see Sylvester Stallone's movie, which leads to some really bad pacing issues, like basically scenes that now suddenly chop quickly from one scene to another, or loads of slow motion, or a skip ton of continuity edit problems, which we will get through eventually. Oh, there's some corkers.
But they had to extend some bits, didn't they? Because get the running time back to a sort of 90 minutes, so that you got some scenes that are too unnecessarily long, like the where he's cleaning his gun and having pizza and stuff. It's just a really long, pathetic scene. It shouldn't need to be that long, but they needed to pad that bit out. Yeah, I read that there was one scene where someone gets their throat slashed and then the hands cut off or something.
Yeah.
Really horrible stuff.
That was actually the very first murder. The very first murder that would appear on the screen would be a throat cut and hands being severed, which was definitely overkill.
Yeah, but the way I'm thinking of it, you know how RoboCop is like super violent and it gives you like justification for a RoboCop? Would that work the same way with Cobra, because you need someone like Cobra to get rid of these complete horrible maniacs, and you don't really see enough of the maniacs in the final cut, do you? Like doing enough nasty stuff to warrant Cobra.
Yeah, it feels like all the violent stuff was just violence for the sake of it in terms of the original cuts, because they said, oh, if we make it really, really graphic, then the audience would be like, oh, they're monsters. But the cults and the whole New World Order, New World Day kind of situation, they're just there's no story behind them, and it's because it's been heavily edited. A lot of the backstory was removed in the final cut.
Yeah, apparently Brian Thompson like discussed with Stallone like about his motives and stuff. He was like, he was asking Stallone what he thought, and Stallone just like didn't want to know at all. Like he was like saying, "You're just a killer. You're just a psycho."
It was Stallone that directed the cast,
yeah,
and did the majority of the stuff, right?
Yeah.
To the point that, you know, people all said that, you know, that George was a great producer, but an absolutely horrendous director, because Stallone just took over and then George just agreed. He just agreed, yeah, that's how we should do it. And I'm not sure whether he didn't want to, like, step on his toes or whatever, but he became a full, like, cakewalk, which is why this movie is 100% a Stallone film in terms of everything, in terms of the look, in terms of the direction, in terms of how it was written, the fact that he stars in it. It's all him. There's no extra like pieces of crew like to blend in.
And it sounds to me like as well, and originally when I read all about this, I was thinking it sounds like Stallone was a nightmare. But at the same time, it seemed like the director was a bit like incompetent in terms of directing, and also he was like, I remember reading that Brian Thompson said, he said to him, you would have done a really good job if you'd listened to me, the director said, and instead of Stallone. It's like, how bitchy is that? Like, but when they're actually filming, he was all like just doing whatever Stallone said.
It's like, yes Stallone I will totally agree with you, Stallone. Yeah, basically it was a pushover. Here are a couple of little Sylvester Stallone ego trips that happened throughout this film. So,
yeah.
Originally, the movie was going to be filmed in Seattle instead of LA, right? It was going to climax with a gigantic motorcycle scene on a ferry that was in between the islands, which sounds amazing, right?
Yeah.
But just before they started filming and they went to Seattle, Stallone demanded the ending to be changed because there was a mosquito problem. He said, there's too many mosquitoes. I can't film here. We're moving somewhere else.
Such a diva.
So, yeah, literally just said, bugs. Fucking hate bugs. We're going somewhere else.
Wow. Just like holding up the entire movie just for that.
Two, the majority of the supporting cast and extras were forbidden talking to Stallone on set.
Like he was a king or something.
Exactly. The only other person who was able to talk to him on set was his wife at the time, Bridget Nielsen, right?
Yeah.
That was about it. Even Brian, which it got to the point, basically, with terms of Brian and everyone and some of the other people like that, is the reason why he felt like they had a really shitty time, because he only appeared on the set, didn't have like any kind of chemistry between them, and then when Stallone walked onto the set, started bossing everybody around. Of course he's a dick.
God, the cinematographer must have had big brass balls to stand up to Stallone then.
He actually said, yeah, and it says here, although Stallone was shocked that somebody would talk to him that way, he cleaned up his act and behaved more professionally right after that, even though he did return to his old egocentric behavior a few weeks later.
Yeah.
So when someone actually told him off and said, oi, stop being a brat, you know, it's like, well, so this guy's got balls. So
he respected that in a way, didn't he?
He did. But then, you know, because he didn't really put much of a you know, he didn't get checked again, his ego came back again. So,
yeah. Oh, Stallone. Sort of
want to lose weight and keep eating.
And here's another one then. For the monologue near the end of the final battle with Brian Thompson, right? Brian Thompson did the scene with a script girl standing in for Stallone. Because do you know where Stallone was at this time?
No.
He was too busy watching a basketball game on TV.
Oh, God. It's a good job they didn't need a shot of Stallone at that particular time. Well, they didn't have the choice, did they?
He didn't have a choice.
In a way, though, if Stallone was there, the camera would be on, could cut to him so much more often. So, in a way, Brian would get a lot of screen time for that monologue with Stallone not being there. So it's kind of a good thing,
I guess. But if Stallone was technically the guy who was directing the movie, it's weird when the director's not there to see it.
So he was the director when it suited him, really.
Pretty much. It's like, oh, I'm just going to watch a game now. And just like, stare sitting out watching a basketball game while this very dramatic, quite important speech.
I love your Stallone impression. It sounds like he's had a stroke.
Stallone is very hard to do. So the reception for Cobra was a critical failure. On average, you can say it was about 14% on Rotten Tomatoes, on an average of about 3 out of 10 as a movie. A lot of people said that it relied so much on common action film tropes and that the level of violence was so gratuitous and over the top that they couldn't get invested. One person even said that Stallone's character is like an empty Hulk. A few attempts to provide us with little insights into his character are downright laughable.
They are. That is a really good... The thing is, I accept all of this criticism, but I still love the movie.
No, the movie itself is 100% unforgivable in terms of, like, terribleness. But it's so... I'm not even sure if it... I think what I like about this movie is, like, I don't think it's self-aware enough to think like what they're doing is literally the most tropiest 80s action movie in the history of 80s action films.
But I think aesthetically, it's really good. Like the cinematography is fantastic. It looks brilliant and it's so cinematic and the music's great. And it's like, but it's just empty. It's like, it's good to look at and the sound is good and everything, the music sound, but it's just got no depth to it. And it's annoying because it's kind of like you can see that the movie is trying to have depth because at the intro, it's got, I love the crime stats.
In America, there's a burglary every 11 seconds.
He sounds drunk here.
An armed robbery every 65 seconds.
65 seconds.
A violent crime every 25 seconds. A murder every 24 minutes.
It sounds like someone doing a Stallone impression.
50 rapes a day.
Yeah.
That's how literally the movie starts. And it's kind of badass. And you see, once you're in there, you're like, yeah. But like I was joking, it sounds like someone doing a Stallone impression. Stallone sounds drunk and tired.
Well, it makes you think of like, hang on, I'll play something. It's like, in the UK lockdown, Johan Schepal watches a bad movie every 3 to 4 hours.
Oh my god. Oh yeah, it sounds so overly dramatic. I love that though. I think it starts off, this is where you can start to feel like this is Stallone literally being sincere. Because this is not him being self-aware. And I think this is why I think Cobra is kind of great, is because Cobra is not in the slightest being winky, winky, nudge, nudge, whatever it is, right? It is really, really trying his hardest to be this gritty crime action film, but completely unaware that it's so OTT.
No, because like going back to what I said earlier, I think because of that awesome setup with the weird kind of like gritty like narration, it seems like the movie should be super violent and justify the Cobra. And I think that movie, like if it was like Robocop, would be kind of awesome.
Yeah, but it feels like it kind of was held back because it just, at the end of it, it fell into the corporate machine.
Yeah.
And Stallone's own hubris to say, it's like, I need more people to watch my movie, so I will cut out 30 minutes or so. And it's like, who cares? Everyone will like it's got explosions.
At the end of the day, it was a financial success, so it is a success. The movie is like a cult classic, you know.
It was a humongous box office success. In fact, it was one of the biggest opening weekends for an action movie by Warner Brothers at that time. The budget for the movie was $25 million. Which demonstrates a little bit because Canon films are great at doing low budget-ish kind of films. But it ended up grossing worldwide about $160 million.
That's awesome. So much money.
Six times the budget. So yeah, it did well. Like, this is not us going, oh, I wish more people saw it. Clearly loads of people saw it. Right, so here's a plot. Is do we have any appropriate synthwave music to play in the background as I go through the plot?
Yeah.
Right, so I'm going to do my best gritty moment as I'm reading through it. So, right. As crime runs rampant in the United States, the hard-as-nails LAPD lieutenant, Marion Cobretti, is the only cure for the crime-infested urban jungle of Los Angeles. In the meantime, a string of seemingly unconnected and unmotivated random assaults on civilians will soon drag the hardened officer into a violent war against the psychopaths of the secret organization named the New World. With the Crime Society's sole purpose to weed out the weak, Cobra will escort an important witness, a young model, Ingrid, out of the town to protect her. However, the movement's delusional killers will stop at nothing to track her down. Now the only one who stands in their way is a one-man army lieutenant. Are they prepared for the Cobra's nasty bite?
Excellent. Just like a trailer, mate.
I know, right? I should totally be doing the trailer voice. But yeah, so the plot is quite empty. There is a serial killer on the loose. They're part of a cult. They're killing off the weak, which they never explain what the weak is, which drives me bananas. And it is up to Marion Cobra Cobretti. Now, there's a reason why he's called Marion. This is his own. Marion is actually Sylvester Stallone's homage to John Wayne, because John Wayne's original name was Marion.
Yeah.
So he is totally embodying the sort of hardened John Wayne like character. Sylvester Stallone even mentioned as he was reading the book that got inspired to do the thing, he was watching Dirty Harry at the time.
Yeah.
And he felt instantly influenced to do very similar things that you'd see in Dirty Harry, which it's very fucking obvious that this is him trying to do his own violent spin on something like that.
But during the opening, you get a bit of this. You get the axe aerobics.
Oh my god, yeah. Okay, right. Before we even start this, actually, before we even do the grocery store scene, can we have a chat about montages in this movie?
Yeah, this is the perfect music for that. Yeah, the montages are like a music video.
Yes.
And like the opening has got like the axe kind of aerobic kind of thing going on. And it's like, yeah, they're doing this in time with this music, like clinking two axes. And the logo of the New World Order is like two axes, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
So it's like they're like, this is how bad guys do their exercise, obviously.
Clearly. And there's like three more montages in this entire movie. Clearly, ever since Rocky, Stallone loves montages. But these are probably the cheesiest of all the montages. There's one later on when we're introduced properly to Bridget Nielsen, where there's three things going on, which is very confusing. One, which is the cult is going on a murder spree. The coppers, basically Stallone and his partner, going around the streets talking to hookers. And then there's Bridget Nielsen going through a photo shoot of some kind with robots.
Yeah. It's just basically like her like doing a shoot, isn't it? Her modeling like shoot. But it's cut, the way it's cut is so like a music video. It's awesome. And that's going back to what I said earlier. The movie is just like aesthetically like good looking. And yeah, it's cut like a music video.
This whole movie feels like all the stuff that Stallone liked at the time and people he liked and people he worked with and roping them in to, it's like, hey, let's do a passion project. I'm going to do Cobra. And you can do Cobra with me. So, is my Stallone? I'm not sure if my Stallone's getting better or worse.
Just keep doing it because it's always entertaining.
You're introduced to one of the members of the cultists going into a grocery store and causing a fucking riot.
Yeah.
It starts off with a bang. So if you have no idea what you're getting yourself in for, even with the gritty opening and the weird montage at the beginning, you then get to this bit And it is just hilarious. He takes out, I think it's a shotgun, is it? He takes out a shotgun?
Yeah, just starts shooting shotgun. People. Like, it's quite scary, really, because it's horrible. He just gets a gun out in the middle of the store, shotgun, and just starts blasting at people.
It was horrendous. Like, it shoots one woman in the back, but then what happens is every time he misses, he's clearly a shitty shot because he shoots everything. There's one bit that made me laugh, is he shoots a shopping trolley.
Yeah.
And the shopping trolley, from the power of the shotgun, jumps up into the air.
Yeah. Yeah, Cobra mentions him being having a bad shot on the intercom like this.
Hey, dirtbag. You're a lousy shot.
Mm.
I don't like lousy shots. You wasted a kid for nothing. Now I think it's time to waste you.
Yeah, I just love it. He's just like, hey, dirtbag.
It's so gritty. So, at that point, they call in Cobra. So the police are standing outside. I love the two bumbling cops, the two guys at the beginning, basically the cops that keep coming in over and over again. And so, like, he's like, we have to bring in the Cobra. And you can see, like, do we have to bring in the Cobra? I was like, you wait.
They're totally useless without Stallone, aren't they? They just can't do anything without, they just need him all the time.
Because, no, not going to lie, when you see how Cobra, how Stallone is in this movie, of course you want him for everything. Although he is like every action movie 80s cop thing where it's like, so much collateral damage, everyone dies and everything else.
Yeah, it is like the tropes, isn't it? The traditional cop movie tropes. That's what a lot of the criticism was about, wasn't it?
Yeah. Just an interesting factoid when it comes to this, because I'll just mention that Sylvester Stallone in this movie... The body count in this is hilarious, right? There are about, and I'll tell you, 52 people die, right?
Yeah.
41 of them is by Stallone.
Right.
So Stallone kills more people than the serial killers.
Well, that's what I said. The night slasher and his kind of lackeys, you don't see enough of them killing people because it was all cut out, so...
Okay, so first, so Cobra comes in. He looks all badass. He's got the jacket. He's got the aviator sunglasses. He's ready to go. It is the most 80s outfit, I think, in the history of 80s outfits.
There's that bit where he's hiding from the bad guy in the shop. And there's a really good sponsor pose when he's got the Cools beer. And he's next to Pepsi as well. And he's like, he's got the Pepsi logo there. He's got the Cools beer. It's like all the sponsors.
It's amazing. It's one of my favorite bits. Speaking of which, actually, this movie actually has a shit ton of advertisements throughout the entire film.
Yeah.
Basically, so you have Pepsi, you have Coors, you have Toys R Us, you have you also have Coca-Cola and Miller as well. So all these drinks basically are being
classic 80s. It is great. And then so basically they get to the point where he does actually confront the bad guy, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And my favorite line in that exchange is basically he goes, I've got a bomb, I'll blow this whole place up. I've got a clip of it, actually.
Yeah.
I'll blow this whole place up.
Go ahead. I don't shot her.
What a line!
It's like, I mean, I'm complaining about the script all the time so far, but there are some hilarious lines. I don't know whether it's accidental or what, but that is hilarious. It's brilliant.
There's loads of moments throughout the movie like that. And he also says the other famous line I've got a clip of that as well.
Yeah, because the bad guy goes on to say, like, I'm a hunter. I'm from the New World. I'm killing the weak. And, like, Stallone just says...
You're a disease, and I'm the cure.
The famous line. That's the tagline of the movie, isn't it?
It is. He goes out, he gets confronted by the press and the rest of the other coppers, and they're saying, like, it's like, did he have to die? Did he have to do so much collateral damage? Da-da-da-da-da. At one point, he grabs a reporter. And chucks over to a body. So it's like, you know, everyone has a right to, you know, justice by the law. And so Stallone grabs him, puts him over to like a guy on the thing and say, tell that to his family.
Yeah. Yeah, because he says this, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Did you use unnecessary deadly force?
I used everything I had.
I used everything I had.
He didn't. To be honest, I don't think Stallone really tried. Like his idea for how to get out of a situation is to just fucking shoot.
Yeah.
Because he is a member. He is a member of a squad in the police station.
The zombie squad.
Called the zombie squad.
Yeah. Yeah.
They are basically like the last line of defense, where basically when things get really shitty and you need to take an unethical or unapproachable sort of thing to get there, right? You get these guys because they will just break. They'll do whatever it takes to get there. It doesn't matter if it's slightly against the law, they'll fucking do it.
It's kind of like special forces kind of thing, isn't it?
Basically, they're not dressed like a SWAT team or anything like that, but they're special tactical forces, which apparently the zombie squad is actually inspired by an actual department in Belgium.
Okay? All right.
So in Belgium, there is actually a zombie squad, which is basically where they have members. They have members of they have things like bounty hunters and stuff like that that they call if they can't do the job through regular police means, and they get all these renegades to literally get the job done by any means necessary.
Right.
This was a thing in a while, and that's what, again, inspired Stallone to do this. To say, like, it's like, you know, they have this thing in like this in Belgium. Maybe we should do it in the United States, too. First time you properly see a murder happen, like not like proper, is when this woman's just driving and then just bumps and then a car just bumps into her.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
And this is probably one of the funniest bits in the movie for me because I didn't expect it coming. You see this woman with big hair. She gets out of the car. It's raining a bit. She's a big car. Walks in. Walks in front of her, and she's like, "Oh, I'm so sorry to hit you." There's no one else on the road, by the way, so it's just these two. And the woman basically goes over to her and says, "Like, say, how could you possibly hit me? Are you drunk?" And then they cut to the camera, moonlighting underneath. Her eyes and her face are like this. They're like hard, and then she goes, "Yes."
There's loads of moments where you think the characters are going to elaborate more on their dialogue, but they don't. They just kind of, it just cuts off. That's that. That was it. There was nothing more to that line. That's it.
And then right after that, just fucking like the night slasher just comes in and just kills this woman.
Yeah.
And that is when we're introduced to Bridget Nielsen.
Yes. She's the witness, isn't she?
She's the witness.
Yeah.
She's the witness. And so she's driving, which I think she seems to be driving towards to a shoot of some sort, I think. She's driving to some kind of late night shoot, it seems to be.
Yeah.
And she sees the aftermath of this murder where as she's driving, you see, you know, the night slasher and the big poofy haired lady and everything else just packing the body away in the back of the van. And,
it's like in the middle of the road or something. They're not like conspicuous at all. They're basically like, yeah, just out in the open, kind of like going about their business.
Anyone could have seen it. Like, this is they are not trying to hide this at all. So when Bridget Nielsen drives past and she just zooms in faster when, you know, when the night slasher gets angry, it's like, rada, 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 right?
Yeah.
Basically, which then leads to the whole weird sort of shoot thing and everything else. But yeah, what did you think of Bridget Nielsen in this movie?
It could have been anyone.
Mm.
It could have been any like sort of hot woman in the 80s. It's not, she didn't like make it, her performance didn't punch out, did it?
Nah, it didn't.
No.
I kind of felt like, because this was, I think, her third film after Red Sonja, I think. And Red Sonja, that's going to be one we eventually have to cover.
Yeah.
But I don't think she ever really was a good actress. So when she's trying to be like sincere and saying half her lines, it seems very deadpan. And I noticed this the instant we get into the car park sequence.
Yeah. when she's like being chased by the night slasher and stuff like that. You mean when she's got the jacket on with the fringe and the fringe is flapping like crazy? The fringe is stealing the scene. The fringe on her jacket is going wild, doing more acting than she is.
It's amazing. It pops up, it pops down, it goes left, it goes right, it does everything. The continuity in this movie is astonishing. I kind of like the sequence because it's so OTT, like I've never experienced something like this, where she's being like hound-dogged by what seems to be the photographer, I think.
Her photographer, he's basically like hitting on her. Apparently in the longer cut, there was lots more of him like hitting on her and stuff like that, much more of his character. But like you don't see much of it. He just you know that he's trying to like get with her, but that's it. Just from one bit of dialogue.
I think that would have made more sense if there was more of him, like, attempting to go on a date with her kind of thing.
Yeah.
But just randomly, it just feels like the photographer's going like, hey, you know, maybe you and I should go on a date kind of thing. And it's funny because he basically says things like, it's very sort of sexist now, but say, hey, it's not like I'm asking you to marry me. You know, I'm just asking for a date.
He kind of seems like the character that's sort of like, it's implied that his models just sleep with him kind of thing.
Yeah, kind of thing. It's like, oh, it's implied. He actually said, like, it'll be good for your career. Gross.
But it's just another stereotype, isn't it, of that type of character.
When that happens, they're going to the car and everything else, suddenly he gets killed off and, you know, the Night Slasher and some of his goons with fucking axes and stuff. It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Starts chasing her down everywhere. There's one part that I love about the sequence where there's a random businessman just appears.
Yeah, he's like a traditional kind of like stockbroker type, isn't he? Like he looks sort of like that. He just gets absolutely nailed by this axe.
And you can tell he got killed because suddenly a bowl of champagne just in slow motion breaks on the ground.
Yeah, he's just got the luxuries just there in his hand. He got the champagne. He's just ready to go. But no, he was going to have a good night and it got cut short.
Very cut fucking short. It was brilliant. She does eventually kind of escape, but not without having a couple of other casualties. Like she finally gets to the lift.
Yeah.
She gets to the lift. And when the lift opens, the security guard, right? Mm. And obviously she's being smart, saying, someone help me, someone's trying to kill me. And then you've got the three goons
come in.
And then I think you got the Night Stalker. He's in the car with like pantyhose on his head.
He looks even scary actually with that on. He's a frightening guy.
Oh, he looks terrifying with the pantyhose on him, right? and this is so good because you see a close up of his lips going, "Kill her."
A lot of his like lines, like sometimes he'll cut to the scene and he'll just say one thing like that, and then he'll cut to something else, like end scene.
He'll grunt and he'll just be like, ugh. And that's the end of the scene. Or there's a scene later on where, for no fucking reason, he's just like, he's sharpening a knife and he's just about to like pierce. He's like, it feels like he's about to chop his finger or something, and all you see is like a close up of him cutting the finger and says like, "The girl is mine." That's literally all she says.
Let's talk about the knife for a second, though. That knife is really fucking good. It was made especially for the film.
Yes.
And Stallone asked the creator of the knife just to make a knife that the audience will never forget. And it's a good brief, that is, because he did make a knife you don't forget about. It's a scary-looking weapon, that is.
It is the weirdest over-the-top killing machine weapon I've ever seen. Because it's like a flip knife, but it's massive. It's got this big curve on it. It's got spikes on the handle.
It's like a knuckle duster and a blade, isn't it? Like a knife. So you could punch someone and stab them with a knuckle duster thing, but then you could also slash them.
It is awesome.
Yeah.
It's absolutely awesome. So back to the lift bit. So when he gets in the car, he says, I need her. So he gets in the car, drives the car to the security guard and just runs him the fuck over into the lift, and it was just like a bam.
It's so like over the top. He just rams straight into him, doesn't he? Like smash into the wall. You'd think these guys want to be a bit more sneaky, wouldn't you?
Sneaky is not their fucking tactic. It's just like murder, 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 murder.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, I want to ask if you reckon, if you noticed this weird running trope in the movie, because I did.
Okay.
There's a weird thing about food in this movie.
Yeah, I think it's just to like attempt to have some kind of something else going on. It's like, because him and his partner, what's his partner called? I can't remember.
I'm looking at this now. I can't remember myself. Gonzalez.
Yeah. They have like this kind of like friendly kind of like buddy relationship. And all they seem to talk about is like food and stuff, isn't it? But I think it's just to add some other kind of like depth to it. But it doesn't really work, but they're trying. Like,
no, but the thing for me, I noticed that Cobra's a bit of a dick. Like, yeah. In terms of like his diet and stuff, it's like saying like, what are you eating, sugar? It's like, do you know why you're so angry and so violent? Is all the fucking junk food you're eating? Have a salad.
I've got that actually.
You know, when this is over, I like to celebrate by punching a hole in Monty's chest.
You know what the trouble with you is? You're too violent.
This is coming, Stallone.
It's all that sugar you're eating.
So there's that, and it's like, actually, I did find Stallone funny in that scene when he goes, "You're too violent."
But then, throughout the movie, there's other moments like this. Like, there's a bit where he's sort of like saying, at one point, Gonzalez just like, again, Bridget Nielsen has just explained this horrible, horrifying situation, and then Gonzalez just literally goes over to Cobra and says, what are you eating? He's like, I'm having some kind of cheese salad. You want some? Oh, okay, sure. I'll have a cheese salad. What is in this thing? And then there's other bits as well, like talking about their favorite kind of drink, and they're talking about different kind of stuff. And I think Cobra is a food snob.
I love the bits later on in the cafe.
Yes.
In the diner. Because he says the worst joke ever. She's basically eating French fries, drowned, like, put so much ketchup on him. And he just looks at them, like, in disgust.
I know.
Just says this.
Do you have a life preserver?
What?
Your French fries drowning her.
So bad! It's so bad!
It's like the worst dad joke ever, isn't it? Where, you know how we love on-the-nose lyrics? So when he's travelling back, there's a bit of this playing, and I it's made me laugh so much.
Working too hard, trying to make a living, hustling all day. I've had all that I can take.
I get it, it's your R&R time. Calm the fuck down.
Gotta find a way to make it easy on me.
So ridiculous. I love it. This song plays three times, I think. And it's always around the area that Cobra lives, because Cobra lives around the Latino area of it. So, like, not only are we going to say that Cobra works too hard, we're also going to have to establish there's Latinos around.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing that's really, really sort of fascinating, right? So there are loads of goofs in this movie, but one of my favorite goofs, and I'm wondering if you noticed this. Okay. In the scene at the very first time where, you know, there's a big, like, sort of low rider sort of car happening. Yeah, there's a low rider situation. And then Cobra, just being a dick, just bumps the car. Right?
Oh, you mean where he arrives back at his apartment, like, and he parks up and he kind of just bashes the car out of the way,
yes,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
That guy, when I first saw that, I hadn't seen it for a few years, but I watched that. I was bursting out laughing because of the way he talks to that guy.
It's bad for your health, you know?
What is it? Pinche.
Yeah, it's cool.
Me. Clean up your act.
Rips the vest open.
First of all, the guy's like really cocky, and after he kind of grabs him and rips his shirt, he kind of goes all like sheepish, doesn't he? He's kind of like, he's sort of like intimidated by Cobra at that point. But I love the fact that he rips his entire vest off.
Yes. Oh, now here's the thing. I wonder if you noticed this, and this is, I noticed this instantly. Okay, so in the scene where he bumped into the Hispanic gangster's car to park, you know, whatever they had an argument with, when he tells him it's bad for his health, he rips the man's white undershirt, right? But there's a taped lapel mic that is visibly clear in the chest.
Oh, no, I didn't see that, no.
Oh, it is. It's so obviously there. And I just watched it. I'm thinking, why is there a lapel mic there? And I wasn't sure when it said, like, clean up your act or something. I thought, is he wearing a wire? Like, what's happening there? No, apparently they left that. It was there so that he could read the lines properly, so he can record his dialogue. But the Stallone ripped the shirt so hard that it exposed everything. Yeah. And then because of that, for continuity's sake, they had to keep the lapel mic on for three other scenes with the guy in it.
Oh, God. Hilarious.
Finally goes to the apartment, and we've been kind of waiting for the scene.
Oh yeah, we've been talking about this, it's building up to this. There's so many golden moments in this. For a start, it's a stupidly long shot when he enters. It's kind of, yeah, it doesn't cut for ages, it kind of follows him in.
Yeah.
He sits down, he's got his pizza, mm-hmm, and he opens up his pizza, and he cuts it with scissors.
Okay, number one, who the fuck eats pizza this way?
I know other people find it really odd, but sometimes before I had a pizza cutter, I used to cut pizza with scissors myself because it's easier to cut. But it does look odd.
No, it's not the scissors cutting with pizza is the problem. That's not the thing. He doesn't cut it like tiny slice. He cuts the end of the pizza off and just has a tiny corner of it. Like, what are you doing?
And he keeps his like sexy leather gloves on as well, which is a bit weird. It's like, I don't want to touch the pizza with my hands.
And then on top of that, okay, then he opens an egg carton of some sort that has all the gun cleaning stuff. And he's doing this, so he's eating pizza. He's eating pizza terribly. He is cleaning out his gun while watching the news, which before then has an advertisement for goddamn flippin' Toys R Us.
I've got it. And this makes you feel so nostalgic. If you remember Toys R Us as a kid, now obviously we haven't got Toys R Us, this actually makes me really nostalgic.
Fireplaces glowing, bicycles rolling, hearts overflowing with cheer.
Oh my God, it plays it so obviously there. It's hilarious. Eventually, what's happened there is that now there's a witness and everything else. You know, the coppers are saying, like, right, okay, we're trying to do it our way. But then, obviously, more murders are still happening.
Yeah.
So they finally go over to Cobra and say, right, you do what you do, right? Just be careful with collateral damage. And I think one of the dickhead cops should go and say, and try not to whack off the wrong person, yeah?
Yeah. Is that like that Monty guy? The Monty guy's always in his face, isn't he? Like, saying, like, this is not the way I would do it. And he's like really always laying into him.
Well, like the glasses. The guy with the glasses.
No, it's the guy that was in... the guy. His name's Monty in the movie. He's the guy that was in Hellraiser as well. He's the dad in Hellraiser.
Yeah. Well, see, that guy, he's a bit of a dick. But then you've got the guy with glasses on. Like, he's the bigger dickhead. He's always in Cobra's face and saying, you're not doing this again in the right way, man. You always do whatever it is. He's always in his face. At one bit, actually, he really gets into his face. This is later on in the movie. And, you know, he's saying, like, you know, how many people got to die to do this, blah, blah, blah. Fucking Stallone just fucking grabs him. He's about to wail on him right there and then.
Yeah, there's a bit where he's saying, I've heard you withholding a sketch of the Night Slasher. And he goes, and they want to see it. And he goes, he says this, Cobra says this.
You didn't say the magic word.
What magic word?
Please.
What a dick.
But that's another example of like terrible like script writing, because he you want him to say more than that. It's not even a funny line. It's like, you didn't say a magic word, please. Okay. You want something more than that. It's not funny.
The thing with the whole movie is what Stallone thinks is funny is just being a dick.
Yeah. Because in the same scene when he's leaving, the guy says, you've got an attitude problem.
So, Freddy, do you know you have an attitude problem?
Yeah, but it's just a little one.
I laugh at
And that's that. On the same lines as the magic word kind of piece of dialogue, isn't it? It's just like really, it's kind of so shit, it makes you laugh.
I kind of love that, actually. I love that it's kind of cringy, because I think it sums up Stallone in general. I think Stallone generally finds these lines to be hilarious. He thinks this is witty, right?
Yeah.
And he thinks this character is going to do it, because obviously what he's trying to do is, again, trying to do the Dirty Harry thing, because Dirty Harry also had good witty one-liners, but it suited him, because most of the time half of it's just profanities and calling everyone a dickhead, and he's just this hard grizzled grr kind of thing, right? When Stallone's doing it, it just doesn't seem to work. It just seems like a dick move more yeah, than just being hard and grizzled.
It's not, I think he was, because he was a bit obviously in big competition with Arnold Schwarzenegger at the time.
Yeah.
And Arnie can deliver such a good one-liner it's hilarious when he does it. And more often than not, the script is better for Arnie, so he can kind of, the line is funnier anyway. But like when Arnie delivers a liner, you always remember them because they're so well done and funny. But if Stallone does it, like in this movie, you're laughing at him rather than with him, aren't you?
This moves on to. Okay, so realizing now that the Night Stalker now knows who she is, he knows who the witness is, right? And so he decides to take a little personal like trip to the hospital that she's being held at.
Yeah.
All right. Now, this for me made me laugh so hard.
Yeah.
Because. Okay, so basically, the Night Slasher, you know, Brian Thompson, he has a very distinctive looking face. Like, it's to the point that, look, it does look like you walk into a room like, that's a bad guy. Although, interesting enough, here's a factoid for you, right? Brian Thompson was actually auditioned for the role of the Night Slasher 7 times, right?
Yeah.
He was done 7 times, because and on the 4th time he tried to audition, he was told by Sylvester Stallone that he just looks too nice, which I do not believe in the fucking slightest, looking at this movie.
And yeah, it's obvious that they were just totally wrong, because as soon as they did a screen test, he got it straight away, because as soon as you see that guy on screen, you know he's perfect for that role.
But yeah, because he looks fucking terrifying. So he decides to try and infiltrate the hospital by killing a janitor and stealing his outfit. And the first time you see him in this outfit is when he's in a lift.
Yeah.
And it is the most, like, suspicious, non-suspicious kind of like caricature ever. The costume doesn't suit him. He's got the big glasses and everything else, the gel back hair. And he looks like, oh, I'm just a janitor.
Do you know what it reminded me of? The game Hitman.
Yes! It does.
Because Hitman is just so intense that he just looks like a crazy, like, sort of assassin, basically, which is what he is. And, like, you can spot him a mile off. It's the same with this guy. He's just, you can't blend in.
And I love the bit where you got, like, the other, like, elderly nurse or something like that. She goes in and saying, you shouldn't be using the service elevator. Next time, take the stairs.
Yeah, and he's like primed and ready to kill her, isn't he? He's like almost disappointed that he doesn't get to kill her.
Oh, man. Like, this did get pretty cool. So he finally goes into Bridget Nielsen's room, and just starts trying to stab her. He's trying to. There's one bit where he finally stabs through the door and his arm's just wailing, just trying to stab her.
Like, yeah.
And this is the bit what proves to me that this hospital's inept, because there's a bit where Bridget Nielsen is running through the hallway, so they're like, somebody help me! It's dead quiet, right? Mm. And you're thinking, maybe there's no one in the hospital. She pulls a fire alarm, and everyone comes out of their rooms, thinking like, did you not hear a screaming woman going down this hallway?
It's ridiculous. No, it's not like a mental asylum. If you heard screaming like that, you would, like, you know, be alarmed.
I know! You're thinking, like, oh my god, something's happening. But it's like, no one's responding. She's banging on doors, she's doing all this shit. Nothing. Like, absolutely nothing. Oh man, it was too funny. Cobra goes back to his apartment to do some research, right? You know, because he's now got the whole, like, he's got the sketch and everything else. He's going to be like, I'm going to try and find this guy. He's going through books.
Yeah.
He looks so weird. He's flipping through books, typing on a computer. Suddenly gets a phone call from Gonzalez and say, like, I'm in your office. Is that how? I'm in your office. What do you need? And Cobra said, so what are you doing there? I thought you were in the hospital. And it just turns out saying, like, and it's like, no, I got a call from the police department saying it was you. And it's like, get back to the hospital. Get out of there. And the moment that happens, just a bunch of guys just break into his apartment and just try and fucking shooting at him. There's a bit where he finally gets onto the roof or something like that, and one of the guys just runs through a glass door to get to him.
Yeah, and like during that sequence, wall-to-wall Pepsi around them. It's like everywhere. It's
like... He's lit by a giant neon sign of Pepsi.
It's almost like he needed to get the Pepsi sign and like hit him with it or something.
So Cobra finally arrives onto the scene just in the nick of time to say that she's okay. And so they're saying, right, we need to move you into the safe house.
Mm.
Right. This is when we're reintroduced properly to the bushy haired woman.
Yeah.
Because she is a mole.
Yeah. They got someone on the inside.
I love that bit where it says, I got something on the inside. It's like, hey, you got proof?
Not yet.
Although it seems so obvious, because all he had to do was say someone from the police department called Gonzalez. That is enough for proof for me.
Yeah.
You know, at least he said there's definitely a mole here somewhere, so someone get internal affairs involved. Nah, they don't bother. They gloss over that bullshit.
I mean, I like the idea of these bad guys, this new world order. I like the idea that, like, it could be anyone, and they're just blending into society, but they are like complete sort of psychopaths. And I like the fact, you know, when you see them doing their axe aerobics, you see all different kinds of people, like a suited man and like different kinds of like people in different jobs. They're all part of this like organization. Like, and that's kind of a creepy concept, isn't it?
They don't explore it, and they don't actually establish what's considered weak. What is weak? Mm. You know, because I understand that we're going to weed out the weak. Okay. Can we know what the week is? Because it seems like you're just killing random fuckos at the moment, you know? So, and now Bridget Nielsen's like, she is the weakest of all. I have to kill her.
I think it's just because it's difficult for them to get her, because she's now connected with like Cobra and stuff like that. So it becomes a big chore for them. It's what's meant to be a simple thing.
This is my favorite action scene in the whole movie. This is the chase scene. This is the car chase sequence.
Yeah.
And oh my God. Wow.
Before we go into it, let's talk about that car for a moment. How cool is that car?
Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah, it was owned by Stallone at the time.
Yeah, it's a custom 1950 Mercury. So,
with nitros. Yeah.
The studio produced stunt doubles of the car for use throughout the action sequences, so it could jump and do all the crazy stuff this car seems to do.
Yeah.
So basically, Stallone says, like, I got a car. I want to use my car. But so like, they say, are you going to do the stunts with it? And it's like, no. So he goes and tells the studio, and says, like, I want this car. And it's like saying, you know, we have loads of other stunt cars here. No, I want this one. I need to make it. So it was really sort of over established what the car can do. The car can go from 0 to 60 miles per hour in 4 seconds.
Did you happen to notice what the number plate says?
No, what would the number plate say?
The number plate says awesome 5-0.
Amazing.
It's like a different spelling of awesome, obviously, so it's shorter. But now there's a close-up of it when he first arrives in the car at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah,
it shows the number plate close-up, and that's what it says. I just burst out laughing at that. It's so good.
Awesome. Again, he fucking knows he's awesome, isn't he? That's the whole kind of point with him.
Don't you think this character, though, is kind of like set up for like almost to be an action figure? Because he's got the souped-up car that kids would like. He's got the gun that's got the cobra on the handle. He's got the sunglasses, got the leather jacket. He is basically an action figure, isn't he? And you could get all those things, buy all the other things sold separately kind of thing.
No, here was a thing, actually. originally, and this is an interesting fact, there were things that pipelined in the time to actually make full-blown action figures of Cobra.
Yeah.
And the whole thing. Because this was weird. Like, if you could toyify, it was great. But because of the high R rating at the time, they weren't very sure if they could do it. They did eventually make some, but they became sort of collector's items at the time.
Yeah, because I remember in the past, though, them making action figures of like 18 certificate movies, and yet it was weird. So you'd play with these toys of these films you weren't allowed to see. It was like it's just odd.
But anyway, back to the car chase. So the car chase is my favorite scene because at the very beginning, so you've got the crooked cop and Gonzalez in one car. And then you've got Bridget Nielsen and Cobra driving the other car, right?
Yeah.
And so they're basically the crooked cop and Gonzalez gets run over by a truck, basically, like, and it's just cars like immobile. And then some of the other cultists in the other car, as it were, just drive past Cobra and start shooting. And it is the most over-the-top, ridiculous car chase I think I've seen in a movie, and I love it a bit.
Yeah, what's so hilarious about this scene is the fact that the entire New World Order go after Cobra. So he kills all of them, pretty much. I think, you know, he's supposed to have killed the entire cult in this scene, apart from the Night Slasher. And, like, the crooked cop. So he's kind of wipes it. It's like he's trying to get rid of all the plot holes in one kind of scene. Like, so what happened? Because I was originally thinking, like, at the end of the movie, yeah, but he's only really killed the main kind of guy from the cult. What about all the other people are blending into society? Apparently, he's supposed to have killed them all in that scene.
Yeah, like, he's killed most of them in that first car chase. And in the second car chase, he kills the entire cult, basically. So in the first cult, right, so the first car chase is brilliant because obviously he's been chasing through traffic and it's awesome. It's really, really cool stuff with the Night Stalker going in with a shotgun and machine guns. It's fucking ace, right? At one point, I actually gave it a round of applause when this happened. So Cobra does a 180, drives backwards, shoots the van behind him with a fucking machine gun. The van explodes. He does another 180 and zooms forward while pressing nitrous.
It is so cool. It's like the coolest maneuver in the car. It's like, it's brilliant. It's like, I love the fact he's got a machine, that's like sort of machine gun as well. He's got the supercar. He's got like military grade weaponry. He's meant to be a cop.
It's like, where does he get this arsenal from? He has a bag of grenades at one point, which is fucking ridiculous. And it's full blown over the top action. Another point in that whole chase sequence is when the Night Killer just shoots these two tankers of oil for no fucking reason. And it fucking explodes in two shots, by the way. Just an explosion.
It's like in a computer game, like shoot the red barrels type of thing, isn't it? Like
totally. And so it's like, oh no, Cobra, what are we going to do? Cobra, he just fucking drives through it. And then he hits a boat.
Yeah.
He hits a bow. He does like, hold on. Does like a 360 degree spin. And most people would have died from that crash, but it's fine. They're fine.
They've not even got like a scratch on him, have they?
No. He has one little cut above his eye.
Like an action movie cut. Action like star cut.
It's like, I only hurt my eyebrow from that. It's like, how hard are you? How hard are you to survive that? All you got from it.
So great.
Was just a little cut from his eyebrow. Fucking hilarious. And this is where they kind of go on the road. They go on a road trip kind of thing. They do the whole sort of trying to bond with each other. The whole sort of like, you know, it's like, let's be friends. You know, we're going to be in a hideout in the middle of nowhere. This is our safe house kind of thing. And
yeah, like Bridget Nielsen, like, is totally like hitting on him like all the time. And there's that bit where she's like having a nap and she kind of gets up. And just watches him seductively, like while he's like building a gun. It's just like, yeah, I would like to watch my men build guns.
That's a thing.
But it's so weird, isn't it? It's so like a macho kind of scene. It's like, yeah, women like to watch men build guns.
Please tell me out there, people, if that's a legit thing. Okay, if that's a legit thing, if you find gun building really attractive, I don't know. But it's so weird because all the bonding feels really fake. All of it seems really fake. I mean, the whole bit where it's like saying, you know, his name is Marion, you know, that kind of shit. And you think that's supposed to humanize Cobra. But Cobra is just an empty vessel of just, I don't really care. I look so manly. Grr.
But I do like the bit where he's looking at the, it's like, a stall of tat at that particular part and he picks up that bobblehead and he goes, hard item.
he's doing the bobblehead in time with the bobblehead. He's just moving his head a bit like this.
I know, and that's classic Stallone humor in my opinion. Like when he, because you know, like there is movies where he's actually, he's really good in, like obviously the Rocky movies, like the first like early Rocky movies. And when he's like funny in those movies, that's the kind of like Rocky humor, isn't it? Like when he's like, like doing the sort of like, it's kind of like dumb guy humor, isn't it? Kind of like he seems a bit dopey and it's kind of funny, but it's like, that's actually funny, that kind of stuff that he does.
But I don't know if Stallone thinks that that is character development.
No.
Or whether it's just Stallone being Stallone.
No, apparently in the full like original draft of the screenplay, you were gonna see you're gonna have seen him in a relationship, and she gets brutally murdered, but and obviously that gives him motive to be like almost like the Punisher then, isn't it? Like,
yeah, there's so much missing from this movie that would have filled it in, but I am curious about whether the two-hour movie would have really been great. I mean, people who've watched it apparently have said that it's so much better narratively, but I don't think it would really have improved much. From what we saw from 90 minutes of it, I'm just thinking they're going, that is, nah.
I wonder if like Arrow or someone will like re-release kind of like that version at some point. Maybe. They may do, because obviously at the moment, it's like only bootleg, isn't it? You can't like, and it would be really poor quality, because obviously they would just kind of put together like rough bits with the actual end so you get the best version footage mixed in with that all the rough footage kind of, and it looked really uneven. But if there was like a version that was all remastered and all the rough stuff was remastered, that'd be kind of interesting to watch.
It would have been fascinating. It would be definitely a fascinating watch. Now, just to throw one thing randomly out here before we go into the final action sequence, which is by far the most ridiculous thing in the history of ever, right? Yeah. I mentioned at the very beginning this was a canon movie, and you had no idea it was a canon film. Now, there's a reason for that. The Canon logo does not appear anywhere during the film's opening or closing credits or in any of the publicity materials. The film even ends like a traditional Canon film with the freeze frame and everything else, that kind of thing, and stopped rolling. You know, it ends like a Canon movie. And Warner Brothers came in and noticed that basically Canon overshot the budget quite a bit. And so Warner Brothers got quite mad at this and saying, like, you know, you're supposed to stick to this thing. How have you gone over? And Canon are actually quite famous for doing movies at a lower budget. Canon tried to blame Stallone for a lot of the issues with the budget because of all the ridiculous action scenes and the explosions and the moving around, etc. So Warner Brothers were looking at it, and since they didn't want to piss off Stallone, So they said, like, this is just a Warner Brothers movie. It's not a Canon film. It's a Warner Brothers movie. Even though it is pretty much a Canon Group film with Stallone, they just, you know, the producers are still there. But they basically said, if you don't say it's a Canon movie, it will sell better and make it look like an actual film.
Yeah, because it kind of, Canon movies had a bit of a bad rep, didn't they? In terms of, like, the people associated them with, like, cheap kind of movies. Cheap kind of straight-to-video kind of movies.
You know, it was, like I say, it was a co-production between Canon Films Group and Warner Brothers. Canon were known for things such as Chuck Norris, Charles Bronson, all this kind of stuff, right? When he was able to talk, basically, Canon were able to actually, the producers at the time were able to talk Stallone doing a two-picture deal, okay? One was Cobra.
Mm.
Do you want to know what the other movie was? Which is definitely another one for the list.
I don't know.
Over the Top.
Oh, yes. The arm wrestling movie.
So Stallone made an agreement with these producers to make two movies with Canon, but they couldn't afford Stallone's massive budget, you know, massive fee. So it says, well, if Warner Brothers co-produces this, then we can have, we both win.
Yeah.
Basically. The even though Cobra was a big success, Warner Brothers kind of flew in under the deal and said, actually, we could probably do better if we don't put your name on it.
Yeah.
Because we could get more money out of this. So we're not going to put your logo in there. We'll only put some of the producers in there. That's about it, buddy. Mm-mm.
Yeah, I can actually understand why they did that.
It's still a bit of a dick move.
Oh, definitely. But that's what studios are like, aren't they?
Yeah, and I also think that Stallone kind of realized what he signed himself up for. And he said, like, you know, he did Cobra. He's like, shit, I've done Cobra. I got one more, I've agreed to one more movie with him. And it's just like, fuck, fine. Over the Top it is! It's ridiculous. We finally get to the final scene of the movie. Right.
Yeah.
The final scene in the film is actually pretty fucking epic. So the crooked cop calls the Night Slasher and says, they're over here, basically. I love the bit basically when Cobra, like, it's raining outside, it's nighttime, and Cobra kind of goes out and sees, like, the cop, like, he's making a phone call in the public booth kind of thing. And so, like, you're making a phone call. And it's just, it's like, yeah, it's just, you know, I'm just checking up at the station, seeing how everyone's doing. And stuff like that. It's just like, call from your room. it's just saying, like, oh, no, the phone's broken. It's such an obvious, like, obvious thing. And he goes, like, sure, okay. And then you can have a look in there. You can see, like, ooh, you're suspicious. And then finally, when it's finally revealed, I love the lines between Gonzalez and Stallone at this point when it reveals that the copper is a double crosser.
I never trusted that bitch, isn't it?
It's like, me neither. Oh, it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And then it goes bananas. So all the cultists finally arrive, the Night Slasher, everyone's finally here. And they just wailingly shoot the place. The entire cabin's got fucking holes in it everywhere. Everything is destroyed and becomes fucking like Swiss cheese.
Yeah, it is spectacular.
Well, I love the fact where he's growing grenades. He shoots a guy who I think he's like on a motorcycle, I think it is, and perfect aim, throws his grenade and just explodes.
Yeah, I think actually when I was thinking about it, when I was watching this scene, he doesn't like really use the grenades at the right time, because there's bits earlier on where he's up against loads of people, and surely a grenade you would use in a group so that you can take out a few in with one thing. But I remember him specifically using a grenade just to take out one guy at one particular moment. It's like, I'll just use this grenade on this one guy, and I have to get it pinpoint accurate.
Cobra doesn't think.
No.
Cobra isn't a man.
He's an empty hulk.
So he kills off pretty much nearly all the cultists, other than like a few people. And Bridget Nielsen then runs into this factory that just happens to be there.
Yeah, just because it's a good setting.
He finds a security guard in the factory, and she's banging on the glass door kind of thing, like on the glass window thing. It's going like, "Help me, help me!" And the guy's going like, "Hey, what the fuck are you doing? go around here, gets fucking shot.
There's loads of innocent people that get wasted. For some reason in this movie, it's hilarious. It shouldn't be funny, but...
it's tragic. It's so funny and tragic. You know, there's being chased around and everything else, and you know, there's confrontations with everybody in until it gets to Brian Thompson having the big speech and the confrontation with that saying, pig!
Yeah, I've got that. Should we play that?
That's a bleeding pig! Where are you, pig? Pig. I want your eyes, pig! I want them!
I want them.
I want a pig. Huh? Huh, pig? You want to go to hell with me? It doesn't matter, does it? We are the hunters. We kill the weak, so the strong survive. You can't stop the new world. Your filthy society will never get rid of people like us.
I am so angry!
We are the future!
No! Your history.
Yeah!
That's your history. Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie, that's a fantastic line. That is absolutely an amazing line.
But then they have a bit of a fight, don't they? And then it's like he basically is like saying, "You can't kill me. You've got to take me in." And it's like he says this, like,
"You have to take me in if you can. Even I have rights, don't I?"
Pig.
Take me in. They'll say I'm insane. Won't they? The court is civilized, isn't it? Pig.
But I'm not. This is where the law stops. And I start.
I love the end. He says he should... you should finish it there, but he adds on sucker at the end.
Sucker. But here's the thing, right? Again, this is actually quite interesting, actually. You know, the whole thing is like, you can't kill me. Murder's against the law. No offense, buddy. But he has killed a lot of people. I don't think he cares anymore. Cobra has killed more people than you have.
Totally oblivious. He doesn't know what he's dealing with, does he? He doesn't know that Cobra doesn't care about that kind of thing. He's killed everyone he's come across.
You kind of think he's seeing how he has slaughtered pretty much everyone in this cult, that the whole thing is like, this is murder. It's like, it's not going to fly for it.
Did you also read that there was an alternative ending where the leader of the cult was that Monty guy? This guy. Yeah. I got a clip of him.
Excuse me, gentlemen, but I gotta say what I think. And I think this whole sorry ordeal is like some damn sick joke, if you ask me.
Just your money.
Well, that's just too bad, isn't it? Come on, let's face it. He doesn't give a rat's ass for this girl. She's just another piece of live bait so King Cabretti here can cut a new notch. You've already caused a lot of people to die. How about letting her live?
So that's one of his biggest speeches. That guy was going to be the original cult leader in one of the drafts. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I'm pretty sure it was him. That would have been an interesting development in the story, because I don't know about you, but Brian Thompson's character doesn't seem like the leader.
He seems like a lackey.
Yeah.
That would have been a completely interesting turn of events. Now, the fight scene at the end is kind of brilliant, because it's them just kind of doing this whole like, just going around, he's trying to stab him, he's trying to punch him, and then out of fucking nowhere, just puts him on a giant fuck off hook.
Apparently in the more violent version, you saw it like close up, like the hook going through him and stuff like that.
That was awesome. And then Cobra just pushes him into a fire, and that's how it ends.
Just watches him burn.
It's a perfect ending, because, yeah, the bad guy's a dick, but it's almost like saying Cobra's going, yeah, well, I'm a bigger dick. And so I'm just going to burn you. And he does this with so many other people. Like, people catch fire, get shot multiple times. So much hilarious death.
Yeah, and then obviously then, like, Stallone and Bridget Nielsen are kind of reunited. And, like, you're supposed to... the reason why I wanted to talk about them again is because I forgot to play a clip that's hilarious. Is it, you know, their, like, love theme?
Yes!
It's like this.
There you
are. So cheesy! Was this the one that's playing in the cafe?
It's just any love kind of bits between those two.
There's one bit he's playing, I think he's playing the song in the cafe, and at one point he just fucking just kicks the jukebox and this song pops up. It's fantastic.
It is, timing. Yeah. But just listen to this sample because it's hilarious what I've done with it.
Yeah.
It's just like that. I had to end it that way because that's enough of that. It's the most cheesiest thing. You can't like just fade that out. You need to kind of rip the needle off.
The music in this movie in general is the most 80s cheese you've ever seen. I love it.
It's just all like Stallone's taste of music at the time, isn't it? I imagine him still having that taste of music now.
And then basically the movie sort of ends with the coppers sort of agreeing on it. I love the bit where basically it says, like, you know, if you ever want to retire and get yourself like you want to get a promotion and get out like a more cushier job, just ask us, you know. And it says like, well, it's like, well, you can replace my car. And it's like, and there's one line in the movie that I think sums up the entirety of the film. It's like, it's not in the budget.
Yeah. Yeah. And they
yeah, in the budget, mate.
They ride off into the sunset pretty much on the motorcycle, Stallone and Bridget Nielsen, to a bit of this.
Again, so cheesy.
It sounds like Dire Straits or something, but it's actually John Cafferty, voice of America's Son. That's the track.
How much more patriotic do you have to be? Oh, man. But that was... It rides off into the sunset. So you have Ingrid and Marion driving off into the sunset with his, with everyone else. You know, everyone gets a comeuppance. It's all tied up in a beautiful bow. The end.
Yeah.
Fan-fucking-tastic. What a trip. Okay, so... We've gone through this car wreck of a movie, so let us talk about this by using the Trashometer.
Trashometer.
Okay, so if this is the first time you're listening, we grade all these movies by using the Trashometer. We have five stages. Tame, which means that it was predominantly boring with nothing really sort of fun or anything. Tiny bit trashy, where we're having a bit of fun with it and it seems to be like a decentish film, but it's not really trashy enough. Trash, which is the sweet spot. Mwah, fantastic. Too trashy is when it's starting to get frustrating. Things are starting to get pushed to the edge, a little over the top. And then you've got torture, a movie that is so goddamn terrible that is almost anger-inducing.
Yeah.
So... where do we put Sylvester Stallone's gigantic ego trip that is Cobra on the Trashometer?
For me, I think it's going into the like the too trashy kind of mark. Do you?
Okay. I think it's starting to fall a little bit into too trashy. I think it's because I still had a whale of a time with this movie. Some of the bits that really stood out were fantastic. Like the car chase and the and all the action sequences are just a really kind of wonderful over the top schlock that you just need to watch sometimes if you're a fan of 80s movies. But I argue that if you know 80s movies, there's two camps you can be in. You'd even find everything so tropey that it just becomes annoying, which is where I think we kind of got to at some point, or you just completely embrace it. Which is why I think it's falling a little bit into too trashy, just a bit.
I think most, because it's kind of known as a cult classic now, and I think most people really like the fact that those tropey things are in there and find that entertaining. Yeah. So I think most people would kind of see that as a positive. And you can't deny that it's too trashy. There's too many things in it that make it trashy. So it has to be too trashy.
I agree. I think there's so much going on there. And also the fact that you can almost, after doing research in this movie and in watching Cobra, sitting there being like, this stinks of a Sylvester Stallone ego trip. It stinks of it. Like, it reeks. And it is hilarious to watch, but you can see it's just one man's annoying vision and no one having the balls to stop him.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think we agree. I think it's on the lower end of too trashy, though. I don't think it's... I never felt angry watching the movie, but I can definitely smell the stench. So
I can't remember... Without seeing the visual, I can't remember whether too trashy... Is too trashy kind of like around 70%, something like that?
I think it's around somewhere between the 60 to... I think it's somewhere around the 60 to 80% mark, isn't it?
Yeah. So where do you think... Do you think it lies around about sort of 65% or something? Yeah.
I think about the 65% mark. I think it's just a tiny bit over trash. It's a bit too trashy for me.
Yeah, definitely. There we go. 65%.
The movie is a fun ride. I definitely enjoyed myself. That's a thing. But it definitely is a lot going on, and I had a whale of a time.
Yeah, I when I watched this movie, I always enjoy it every single time. I think it's a really entertaining movie, and it's even with its flaws, I kind of just embrace them and just kind of go with it.
I think it's a fantastic case study of one actor's hubris, one actor's ego taking full control and no one trying to stop him.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're going to wrap up for today. But before we sort of do that, just want to say, if this is the first time you are listening to the show, thank you very much. Remember to like, share, sort of subscribe to it on all the podcast stuff and checking out all the video stuff we have, which you can find on YouTube. So if you go to Enigmatic Productions, you can go to the Trash Tapes YouTube website. And if you're into gaming, we also do Enigmatic Play. So check that out as well on YouTube. And we really are trying our best to get content out still, despite the weird situation.
Yeah, thankfully with things like Skype and whatnot, we can kind of do this kind of situation and still get content out pretty easily. Like, it doesn't work for everything. I mean, it works fine for podcasts, but for, like, obviously, and we can do the gaming stuff via streaming, but some of the more traditional videos where, you know, like reaction videos, thankfully we've got a bit of a backlog we can work through. But we can't do that type of video at the moment, so we just have to put out what we've got.
Yeah. And the thing is, actually, give us some comments about what you thought about this episode in terms of how it's structured and everything else, because this is the first time we've done it this way. And if it turns out doing all right, we might be able to do, maybe at least instead of doing once a month, it might be once every 2 weeks, maybe one time once the pandemic kind of calms down. Maybe I'll come over to yours for one session, and then 2 weeks later we do another one just from the comfort of our own homes, and we could make more content for you.
Yeah, and we have talked about setting up like a Trash Tapes Twitch, so that we can do, perhaps because the live stream has gone well with the gaming, we could do some of our trashometers like live, perhaps, and get some some of the audience kind of chipping in on what they think about this movie and stuff.
Oh, that would be great if we can get like audience interaction of saying, like, we give you like a heads up and saying, oh, we're going to do a review next week of this movie. If you guys want to join us on the stream, watch the film, give us your reactions and your opinions on it. We'll read it out loud on the air, and that will be a great new sort of approach. I can't wait for that. That'll be exciting.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't think a podcast would work on a live stream. Because it's very much just people watching live. It's not really interacting. But like the Trashometer, we basically just where we're kind of rating the movie and talking about little points, you know, bullet points in the movie. So that's a fine situation for people to chip in and talk about what they liked about or didn't like about it.
Any kind of interaction, whether it's reviews, comments, sharing, just anything, just drop us a line and we'll do our best to do that. So.
But one thing, obviously, I'm working on as well, I forgot to mention. I'm working on promos for the channel. So, like, a little sort of, like, two-minute kind of video, which is basically like a trailer for each channel. And that can sit on the channel page itself for, like... So non-subscribers can see that, to entice them in to subscribe. So we haven't really got one of that. We haven't really got anything up to date for that, because the trouble is we remove the title sequences from our shows because it kind of makes them too long. So what we need is basically like a title sequence promo kind of thing as just a little video on the channel, so people watch that and see what it's all about.
Brilliant. I think I'll be quite excited to see how those turn out. So yeah, we'll wrap up from there. Thank you guys very much for paying attention and listening to us ramble about Cobra. We have a couple episodes in the pipeline, which I think are going to be some corkers. There might be a few little extra bits of Bob, so tune in for that. But other than that, then, I'd like you all to keep an eye on your trash. There might be some treasure in there. See you guys next time.
I'll see you soon, yeah.
Brilliant.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Thank you for listening to this podcast episode and hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please share it around with movie lovers you know, maybe add a star rating or write a good review. All of this helps with the algorithm and provides us with more opportunities to reach the ears to a whole new bunch of bad film fanatics. Want to find out more about us? Then head over to our socials where we provide sneak peeks and up-to-date news on everything nostalgic and trashy. You can find our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages in the description. So please, follow us. See you next time, cinephiles.